ST Engineering's full year 2019 results briefing. To begin today's briefing, Mr. Cedric Foo, Group CFO, will present the group's performance for the financial year ended 31st December 2019. Following that, we will invite our management for a Q&A session. Without further delay, I'll hand over to Cedric. Cedric, please.
Very good morning. Welcome to ST Engineering's financial year 2019 results discussions. Let me bring your attention to the first slide. In 4Q 2019, the group delivered a revenue of 2.29 billion dollars. This is an increase of 29% year-on-year. Net profit was recorded at 169.5 million dollars, a 36% increase over the same period last year. Now let's turn on to the full year results. For full year 2019, the group recorded a revenue of 7.87 billion dollars and a net profit of 577.9 million dollars, both at an increase of 17% year-on-year. This is a strong set of results. Next slide. For revenue change, the group ended financial year 2019 with a growth of 17%. That's the bar chart on your left. With aerospace contributing 12 percentage points or 803 million dollars. Other sectors registered a growth of 5 percentage points. Now on your right, for net profit change, net profit for financial year 2018 was 494 million dollars. Now in that year, we had one-time losses, and if we take that out, the absence of the one-time losses from portfolio rationalization would account to 8 percentage points. In other words, we do not expect this 8 percentage points to recur again in 2019. Excluding marine arbitration outcome of 2 percentage points and transaction and integration costs for NewTech and GrowLink of another 2 percentage points, the effective growth rate, absent of these one-time factors in net profits, would have been 14 percentage points rather than 17 percentage points. Still a very healthy 14% increase in net profit year-on-year. The next slide, focusing on 4Q 2019 revenue and profit growth. On the left, for revenue change in 4Q 2019, the group's revenue growth was 29%, and this is largely contributed by aerospace, 17 percentage points, and other sectors registered a growth of 12 percentage points. On your right, for net profit change, net profit for 4Q 2018 was 124 million dollars. With the absence of one-time losses in 4Q 2018 from portfolio rationalization of 24 basis points, and excluding transaction integration costs for NewTech and GrowLink of 6 percentage points, the effective growth in net profit is 19 percentage points instead of 36 percentage points. Still a very healthy 19% growth quarter-on-quarter. Let's now look at the revenue by sector. For 2019, aerospace revenue increased to 3.45 billion dollars or 30%, and this is mainly contributed by MRAS. Electronics revenue increased by 6% to end the year with 2.28 billion, contributed by all business groups within elect sector. This also include income stream from iDirect Europe, which is the new name for NewTech, and GrowLink. Land Systems revenue growth was 11%, or to $1.4 $3 billion, and were higher because of more project deliveries. For marine, the revenue increased by 13% to $647 million from higher revenue generated by our U.S. operations and also our environmental engineering projects. Next, let's look at the breakdown of revenue. Aerospace grew as a result of MRAS acquisition. The group's revenue growth was contributed also by our commercial businesses with 3 acquisitions during the year to $5.7 billion. Defense recorded $2.3 billion. Now, on the geographical split, with 3 acquisitions of overseas entities, MRAS based in the US, NewTek in Belgium, and GrowLink also in the US, our Asia revenue has dropped, and US and Europe revenue has grown. And this is in line with our midterm Investor Day target of having 2/3 of the revenue growth from outside Singapore. Next chart talks to group net profit by sector. Aerospace contributed a net profit of $268.9 million for the full year 2019. Now, despite the 30% increase in revenue we saw just now, the net profit increases by 10%. And this is due to an unfavorable sales mix, largely contributed by some weaknesses in some of the hangar, and we will talk a little bit more about that. Also, in 2019, we took some impairment of assets, which we will also elaborate later. Electronic sector recorded a 2% increase in the net profit to $190.7 million, which was lower than its revenue growth as we continue to make investments in new growth areas like SPTel and GeoInsights. We also incurred transaction and integration costs for the elect sector last year. Land Systems' net profit of $77.3 million was 46% higher year-on-year, and this was attributable to its higher revenue, but also because of the absence of portfolio rationalization losses which we incurred in 4Q last year. Marine net profit of $51.5 million was 14% higher year-on-year. And others incurred lower losses this year from the absence of the one-off MTN early redemption interest expense and also the absence of interest expense incurred prior to the MTN redemption in July 2018. So for the first half of 2018, there were interest expenses as the MTN were still effective. Now let's move on to group net profit margin. The group net profit margin for the quarter and the year have remained stable at 7%. Next, balance sheet. Well, the first item I'd like to talk about is the $484 million right-of-use assets. The group applied, in accounting lingo, modified retrospective approach on the adoption of SFRS I-16 for leases. And what it meant is that we do not restate the prior year numbers, therefore you see a dash under right-of-use assets for 31st December 2018. And for the year that we started adopting this in 2019, right-of-use assets from leases will be capitalized, and it shows $484 million. The next number, intangible assets at $1.98 billion, this has grown largely because of the intangibles associated with the acquisition of MRAS, NewTek, and GrowLink. Next, the current assets that has also grown because of higher contract assets. Under current liabilities, $5.4 billion, that has also grown. This is because we have replaced longer-term bank loans with the U.S. commercial paper, which is short-term in nature. And these proceeds from this U.S. commercial paper were used to finance the acquisitions of MRAS and Newtek. Of course, we are planning to issue a longer-term bond to term out this U.S. CP sometime this year. Then for non-current liabilities of $1.58 billion, this is largely due to SFRS 16 lease liability as well as MRAS pension liability. So I move on to cash flow. The lower net cash from operating activities was due to a less favorable working capital movements and partially offset by a higher EBITDA. Now, before I move on to the outlook, let me just explain a little bit about the engine-backed securitization project, which we finalized last week. We have told you some time ago that for our asset-heavy businesses like aircraft leasing, where we owned it and then leased it out, or engine leasing, where we have to own it and then lease it out, this naturally has a burden on our balance sheet. And we have said some months ago that we are working actively to see how we can deleverage, we can basically securitize some of these assets and let it be owned by other vehicles so that we will only manage and service them. And this is the first illustration of how we have done that. So just for clarity, let me refer you to the left. TEAM is a joint venture company, 50-50 owned between ST Engineering and Mount Rainey. So, of course, it has some startup equity. It then raises loans from external banks to finance its purchase of engines. So, TEAM actually owns maybe around 47 engines, 30 of which is placed under this securitization program. Then, of course, it leases out the engines to engine lessees, airlines, and so forth. So in terms of cash flow, if you look at the dotted lines, the airline or engine lessees would pay lease income as well as maintenance reserves. And this will flow up to TEAM, and TEAM will use the proceeds either as profits or payment of to service the principal and debt payment. Now, when we securitized it, what it meant is that we created the securitization special purpose vehicle. And this vehicle will raise money through equity and debt. There are three tranches of debt, which are fixed rate notes, basically, of different subordination. Some are higher risk, some are lower risk, but of course the higher risk pays higher return. And the company Crow has done a cash flow simulation of the different tranches of debt. And so there are three tranches of debt. So this have been successfully and fully placed out, actually at a rate lower than we had initially expected. So the fixed coupon was quite attractive from our point of view. Then it issues equity or e-notes, which ranks after all the debt, and it carries higher risk and, of course, higher return. And 90% is placed to outside of TEAM, and TEAM retains 10%. As an anchor stake. From these proceeds of debt and equity, the securitization SPV will then buy over all the 30 engines from TEAM, and TEAM will receive R1, which is the proceeds from sale of engines. So it's a big chunk of money, and this allows us to reduce the capital employed and to repay all the debt owing to the banks, and therefore improves our economic value added. So with lower economic value added, we are still able to enjoy service fees, and service fees come in this form. The engine leases are novated to this SPV, then it receives the lease income and maintenance reserves. It then went to service the fixed rate note holders and any remaining services, the e-note holders. And at the same time, we will receive as asset manager the servicer fee. And very importantly, although in a little footnote here, potential MRO work for the aerospace group. Yeah. So with less capital employed, we get this stream of income and lower risk, of course. Yeah. The obsolescence risks are all passed on. So with that, let me just leave you with the President and CEO's outlook, which I think you can read it from the slide. That ends the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Cedric. Can I invite the rest of the management team on stage for the Q&A session, please? Let me do a quick introduction of the team. From your left, Mr. Lin Sergi, representing aerospace sector. Mr. Vincent Chong, President and CEO of ST Engineering. You've met Cedric. And Mr. Ng Seng Chan from Marine. As part of BCP's split team arrangement, Mr. Ravinder Singh, President of Electronics Sector, and Dr. Lee Xiang Long, President of Land Systems Sector, are dialing in for this discussion. With that, I'll hand over to Mr. Vincent Chong. Vincent, please.
Good morning, and thank you for joining our full year 2019 results briefing. Our results, as Cedric has presented, was a strong set for the fourth quarter as well as for the full year. And as Cedric mentioned, we have higher weightage of revenues generated by customers outside of Asia, and that's in line with our objective to further expand our business globally. 4Q 2019 results were strong, as you saw. Revenue was $2.3 billion, up 29% from a year ago, with all sectors posting double-digit year-on-year growth, except for Land Systems, which saw a 3% increase. PBT grew 24% year-on-year to $198.8 million, and net profit grew 36% to $169.5 million, as all four business sectors delivered strong earnings. On a full-year basis for 2019 versus 2018, revenue was up 17% to $7.9 billion, PBT grew 12% to $695 million, and net profit rose 17% to $578 million. Excluding the marine arbitration settlement impact in third quarter of 2019, full-year PBT and net profit would have been higher at 14% and 19% respectively. Now, all our four business sectors posted revenue growth for 2019. Revenue for aerospace was 30% higher, largely contributed by MRAS and various end-of-program reviews in 3Q of 2019. Revenue for electronics grew 6%, land systems 11%, and marine 13%. At the net profit level, aerospace registered 10% growth from the year before. Its net profit would have been high if not for these key factors affecting the AMM business group, namely the impact of flight school impairment and higher staff costs incurred in the US. Electronics sector posted a modest 2% growth in net profit as we incurred transaction and integration costs for the acquisition of NewTek and GlowLink. Net profit would have been 9% higher if the expenses for M&A were excluded. Net profit for land systems grew 46% in the absence of portfolio rationalization loss incurred in fourth quarter of 2018. And marine's net profit grew 14% despite the arbitration settlement impact helped by improved U.S. operations and sale of ROPEX, which was completed in October of 2019. At this point, I'd like to turn to our smart city business, which we target for it to be a $2 billion revenue business in 2022 as part of the group's five-year plan. I'm pleased to share that we are tracking well and have made good progress. Our smart city revenue in 2019 was $1.4 billion, an increase of about 40% from the $1 billion revenue posted in 2017. The number of smart city-related projects completed now stands at 700 projects across 130 cities, Our electronics sector is still the key driver of these projects. We'll continue to apply our innovative solutions to help cities transform as they face increasing pressures in managing public transportation systems, securing critical infrastructure, and ensuring environmental sustainability. Next, I would like to summarize our results with several key highlights. We achieved our strongest revenue and profit growth in 5 years since 2015. In absolute dollars and percentage growth, all sectors registered growth, with aerospace and electronic sectors posting their highest revenue and net profit in history. New contracts momentum remained good. We announced $8 billion worth of new wins, which is a robust level against an uncertain market environment. The traction we have with our customers, many of whom are long-standing customers, is reflected in our order book, which stood strong at $15.3 billion as of end 2019. We expect to deliver $5.9 billion of our order book in 2020. Our focus on portfolio rationalization, including divestments and streamlining of underperforming business and assets in the last few years, has resulted in a stronger business portfolio. We'll continue to develop new businesses if we assess that they are able to strengthen our business portfolio and create long-term value for our stakeholders. We delivered an attractive shareholder return for 2019. Our 2019 year-end market capitalization increased by $1.4 billion or 13% to $12.3 billion from $10.9 billion a year ago. So I'm talking about year-end market capitalization at the end of 2019. Shareholders will receive a final dividend of 10 cents per share upon shareholders' approval at the April AGM. Together with the 5 cents interim dividend, total dividend for 2019 will be 15 cents per share. This translates to a dividend yield of about 4%. Our talented people, technology and innovation, as well as continuous drive for operational and financial performance across the whole organization, enable us to achieve this set of good results. But we know that there are still challenges in the global economy and that our operating environment and competitors do not stand still, which is why we continually strengthen and develop distinctive capabilities. We will build our business organically, and where the right opportunities present themselves, we will acquire. Like we did in 2019 with three acquisitions, namely MRAS, NewTek, and Glowlink. MRAS enables us to scale up our aerospace capabilities by moving us further upstream into the OEM business. The business has contributed positively to both revenue and profit, as we had expected. In the same way that MRAS has propelled us into the OE business, we are building a global differentiated SATCOM business with NewTek, now known as iDirect Europe, by combining it with our US-based iDirect as one global business. The addition of Glowlink, which we bought for its advanced SATCOM anti-jamming technologies, will enhance our competitiveness in SATCOM. Going into 2020, while we remain confident in the positive underlying fundamentals of our business, there are a few near-term uncertainties, including obviously impact from COVID-19 outbreak, which we are monitoring closely. Now, it's premature to discuss the potential full impact of COVID-19 on the group, but if the virus outbreak takes a toll on global growth, we will not be immune to a near-term slowdown in the global economy. By our estimates, if the COVID-19 outbreak continues at the current level through mid-year, the overall impact on the group is not expected to be material, and our growth momentum is expected to continue. So let me just say it one more time. If the COVID-19 outbreak continues at current level through middle of this year, the overall impact on the group is not expected to be material, and our growth momentum is expected to continue. Having said that, COVID-19 is still rapidly evolving across the world, thus we will have to reassess if the situation changes. Around half of the COVID-19 impact will be felt at our aerospace sector. Contributing factors include customer demand reduction, supply chain and workforce redistribution. For example, if airlines continue to scale back their flight schedule, it will affect our aerospace MRO business as more airline customers adjust or delay maintenance cycle. As it is now, we are working with our affected airline customers to reschedule maintenance around changes to their operations. In terms of manpower, although we have some workforce disruption, we are currently managing our operations quite well. Despite these near-term challenges, longer-term growth prospects remain positive, as evident by the rebounds following global crises like September 11 in 2001, SARS outbreak in 2003, and global financial crisis in 2008-2009 timeframe. Therefore, our investment plans, including building talent pipeline, continue. For example, our aerospace sector is exploring with Vietnam Airlines to set up an airframe MRO facility in Vietnam. Now that our JV business on component MRO facilities in Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh City are operational, we expect the aerospace sector to perform well, although we may see some softness in the AMM business for reasons which I've just highlighted, the impact of the virus outbreak, as well as the talent constraints resulting in higher staff costs in the US. Now, moving away from the topic of COVID-19 related to MRAS, there were questions on the potential of the US Air Force B-52 re-engineering program. At this time, we will say that MRAS is well positioned as an OEM of nacelle components for the four engine variations that have been reported to be under considerations. However, there is at this time no RFP as yet, so it is too early to discuss the scope and potential of the program. Next, we have recently announced the sale of 30 aircraft engines through TEAM, as Cedric briefly described just now. Our engine leasing JV with Marubeni using securitization structure with positive P&L contribution. As we know it, the deal is the first engine-backed securitization originated by a lessor headquartered in Asia Pacific. With it, we have effectively freed up our capital requirements for this business while retaining TEAM's asset manager role to create value for lessors through our innovative asset management solutions. In this way, we are the note holders of this securitization program will be able to leverage on TEAM's asset management expertise as well. We are pleased with the outcome of this securitization, which will be included in our first quarter 2020 financial results. We will pursue opportunities to scale up our engine leasing business post this successful securitization, which we have just announced and described. Another piece of positive news is that we have just obtained the EASA STC for the A321 PTF program after successful flight tests. I will end with the message that in spite of headwinds caused by the COVID-19 outbreak and the looming uncertainty in world trade, we remain confident of our ability and agility to drive progress to achieve sustainable long-term growth. Before I open the floor for Q&A, I should talk about our position on quarterly reporting. In line with the long-term nature of our business, we will publish financial results on a half-yearly basis. When appropriate, we'll augment our half-yearly financial results with relevant operation information on a quarterly basis. We do value our engagements with you, investors and analysts alike, and we remain committed to have open discussions with you like we have always been practicing within the confines of the SGX listing disclosure rules. So on that note, we will now take questions.
Perhaps maybe before taking questions, I just want to add a few remarks to what Cedric and Vincent have said on the ABS. We start the engine leasing business in 2011 to grow an adjacent business to our MRO business. One main objective is to secure MRO work from the leased engine portfolio. We have been able to realize that over the years. However, with a relatively young and small portfolio, arising is slow. Hence, we developed this process to securitize the engine lease. With this capability, we are able to work with the institutional investor to grow our engine portfolio at a much faster rate. This is a win-win for the investor and ST Engineering. For the investor, they can tap into our expertise and innovative asset management solution to enhance the value of this asset. As demonstrated by the fact that our debt notes were oversubscribed across all tranches. For ST Engineering, we will be able to access a much larger and bigger pool of assets to create value across the different value chain, including the potential for MRO synergies. And also a slight correction, for the B-52, we are the nacelle system manufacturer for two of the four engines being considered, not all the four.
Yeah. Currently, but if Sergey, if the RFP is out, we can bid for all four. I think that's what I meant. Two of them are, of course, in our portfolio. Of course, we'll be more familiar with them, but we have the capabilities to bid for all four if the RFP is out. Right?
Sergey. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Okay, Sergey, thank you for the embellishment on the securitization program. Okay, let me just open the floor for questions.
You can direct to Ravi and Xianlong, they are dialing in.
Yes. So if you have questions, you can direct to Xianlong and Ravi, and they will address them through the teleconference facility. For those of you who are joining us by webcast, you can also send your questions if you want to direct them to Xianlong and Sergey. We will make sure that they get a version of your questions and address them accordingly. Okay.
Hi, I'm Zui from Macquarie. I have three questions, one for Vincent and two for Sergey. Congrats on your very good 2019 results. I think when I look at your dividend payout ratio, it could have been higher. But since you've saved about a cent or two on your dividend payout, could you share with us what you intend to do with the additional capital, like your M&A plans? Do you want me to go on the second question? Or
You can finish all questions.
And then the second question and third question for Sergey. Could you take us through a little bit on your zero business? I mean, the margins were a bit elevated for the quarter. And then also a bit of talk about what's going on in the EMS sector. I think there was a Q-on-Q pickup on the PBT margins. Thank you.
So let me take the first question on dividend. I've mentioned this on numerous occasions. We look at returning value to shareholders on a long-term basis. So if you look at our track record in the last 6-7 years, we've been quite consistent in how we return value to our shareholders through dividend payout. As we look at our business, the stronger the business gets in terms of bottom line contribution, the better we are able to return value. When we return value through dividend payout, we also need to consider how much investments we require to plow back into our business, again, creating value for our shareholders. So I think rest assured that as our business strengthens, our ability to reward or return value to shareholders via various means, including dividend payout, continues to be better. So I'll put it as that, but we have got to look at all our various investment needs when considering dividend payout, but our track record has been quite good. And going forward, I think as the business strengthens, we would like to do more of that returning of value, be it by dividend or other means. Okay.
So as a follow-up on that, can you just enlighten me on what is your current debt headroom for further acquisitions this year?
So I'll pass to Cedric. Yeah.
As you know, we are rated AAA by S&P and Moody's, despite the acquisition of MRAS, Growlink, and NewTek. So the company's balance sheet is still very strong, and obviously we have capacity to borrow more to make meaningful, accretive investments going forward. So I would say that even if we borrow another 2-3 billion Singapore dollars, we would still remain single A or better. Yeah. We cannot be specific as to the level of borrowings. It all depends on the opportunities of investments and acquisitions.
For Cero, the higher margin is due to program mix as well as some end of program true up. As what we have said during the third quarter. But it's always our intention to actually move the margin up from 2018 level. For EMS, the low margin is due to program mix, as well as, if you remember, the disruption to the floor panel manufacturing in EFW due to a fire at one of the material vendors. Maybe I can talk about AMM as well, because I presume there will be some question on AMM. For AMM, there's a drop in the margin, again, due in part to program mix, as well as some operational losses due to the flight school and its subsequent divestment impairment. And the challenges also, which Vincent talked about in AMM due to labor shortages, which I also mentioned in last quarter. The impact on labor shortages impact more of our operation in Mobile, Alabama. We have a facility in Mobile, Alabama. Because we have a very friendly neighbor called Airbus, which took a liking to our people.
Well, I guess, you know, it's in a location where we have several aerospace establishment, competition for talent becomes quite keen. And you know, there's this final assembly line that Airbus has, and of course, competition for talent does end up with certain manpower constraints. Yeah. Be it Airbus or someone else, but competition for talent in that part of the world continues to be keen. Which gives us some staff cost pressure.
Hi, morning, Patrick here from Citi. So I have a question on the SPV arrangement on the sale of the engines. So I mean the disclosure didn't. Okay, maybe first question is actually of the 257 notes. Can we assume the same for a reduction in borrowings, or is this just the 50% that's due to the, you know, your share of the venture? First one. Second one is that in other industries, right, when these tie arrangements are struck, the fee is around, you know, say 1%. So what kind of fee should we be thinking about in terms of the longer-term earnings from these new type of structures? And thirdly, right, what happens to the rest of the engines that's not part of the first deal?
First of all, the loan is about $257 million or so. It doesn't tie directly to the financing the team does today. Yeah. So generally speaking, that loan to value for engine under team today before the securitization is something around 60-70%. Whereas after the securitization, actually our loan to total value of the assets is actually higher, so actually we get quite a lot of proceeds back. On the second question, it's very interesting because the arranger is Citibank, and Mr. Patrick is from Citibank. So clearly the China war is working very, very well. He doesn't know what the fees his investment bankers are getting, which is very good. Yeah. And also I don't think I should, I'm not at liberty to talk about specific fees. But I think suffice to say that post the transaction, we would receive a big chunk of money that we can replace loan and declare dividend up to team itself. And secondly, I think the reduction in capital employed really enhances the value of participating in such structure. No different as, say, a REIT structure, where the manager of the REIT and all that gets to manage it, maintain it sometimes, and continue to pump, manage funds even, and then the proceeds of which will get invested into properties. So as the economies of scale of this business grow, and without us holding it on our balance sheet by securitizing the lease hire out, you will find that as a percentage of service fee and MRO opportunities to the capital employed, it will be greatly enhanced. And that's the direction we are aiming at.
Okay, thank you, Cedric. So maybe just augment my second question, which is more interested to get a colour in terms of the fees that SD Engineering will be able to so-called earn from the SPV going forward, now that you've got this structure in place.
You mean the service fee and the MRO fees?
The service fee, payable to SD as a manager.
I think these are details that we prefer not to discuss. But I think, as I said, the service fees is attractive, the MRO opportunities are great, and if you can do both of this and scale it up without the capital employed, I think this is an excellent structure. I mean, that is why business trusts and REITs are thriving these days. Yeah.
And just to add on to what Cedric has said, I think one of the main objectives is actually to grow the MRO synergy. Okay, it's not just a service fee. I mean, it's part of the value chain. You know, as if you are able to scrutinize another lot of 30 and then 30, you know, then the pool will be big, and then, like I said, the rising will be a lot more. Okay, and based on what we have materialized over the years with a small portfolio, you know, I think it'll be good. There's a question about how much would your net profit growth be? That's from the public, James Chiu. How much would your net profit growth be without MRS acquisition? So if you were to strip out the MRS acquisition, the net profit for the group will still grow by 8%.
Hi, I'm Siki from CMB. Can I just address the question to Siki in terms of the tax credit that you mentioned? Which division actually recognized tax credit this quarter? Was there any major tax credit that was recognized this quarter, or anyone else in your aerospace division profit?
Just on the tax question, actually our effective tax rate this year is quite low, it's 15%. There is a current tax favorable variance as well as a deferred tax favorable variance. The current tax is due to, say, things like PIC, where we have we usually conservatively record the tax provision, and when we receive PIC approval, then we recognize it to reduce the current tax. On the deferred tax, there was a merger between STA Rotables and the one more unit, which is the supplies, STA supplies, and the carry forward losses, deferred tax assets of STA Rotables were not usable because it was not projected to be profitable. But subsequent to the amalgamation, STA supplies could use it because it's profitable, and therefore we recognize the deferred tax benefit.
Okay, there are two questions from sent in from participants of the webcast. I'll just maybe talk a little bit about the question regarding the COVID-19 outbreak, and then I'll hand over the floor to Sergi to give more color. So the question is, why is there a little impact? Let me just read to you. Can you explain why the coronavirus will have little impact on the MRO business based on the assumption that the coronavirus continues at its current pace till the middle of the year? I'll let Sergi give more color from MRO or aerospace MRO standpoint. There is negative impact, but it's not material level to the group if the situation continues as it is till middle of the year. If it changes, we have to reassess. But there is right near-term MRO negative impact for aerospace. I also said that despite that, if it remains at this level through middle of the year, while the impact is not material, we expect our growth momentum to continue as a group. Okay.
Maybe just give a backdrop. If we take reference to the SARS in 2003, the drop in RPK revenue is in Asia Pacific is 35% at the height of SARS. And currently, the Chinese aviation market is much larger. I would expect the impact to the coronavirus to be higher. But however, if we look back over the years, the aviation industry is very resilient. It will bounce back and will continue to grow. The fundamentals of the industry, mid to long term, has always been strong. Again, taking reference from SAR, the industry bounced back to pre-crisis level within 9 months from the start of SARS. So the mid to long term the industry is prospect is good, but short term for some operation there will be some impact arising from drop in the demand from the customer. There will be less flying, less aircraft utilization. There will be drop. There are also one or two, aircraft that drop off coming into Singapore. The customer decided that maybe they would like to defer it. And there's also manpower disruption. Okay, we do have a Chinese worker. Okay, so there'll be some disruption. And we also have our BCP. We are doing some cohorting. And so there'll be some inefficiency. So there'll be impact. But at this point in time, it's still too early to assess the impact. Because it's the situation is rapidly evolving. But we'll continue to keep a close watch on the situation.
Okay, so there's one question. Now, before I go on to the next question, I just want to acknowledge that it was Kevin Lim from Nikkei News Rise who asked the question on coronavirus impact on our MRO business. So thank you for that question, Kevin. I have a question from Sean Ng from JP Morgan. The question is, can you offer any guidance for smart city revenue in 2020? I think it's safe to say that we're on track to achieving our five-year plan targets. We said that in 2019, our smart city revenue is $1.4 billion. If you recall, we said that we want to reach $2 billion of revenue by 2022. We're still on track. We obviously will keep you updated at appropriate junctures. We will not go into the specifics of 2020 at this time. But thank you for asking that question, Sean.
Okay, there's one question from James Shaw. Could you quantify the contribution coming out of China operation in terms of revenue, earnings, or man hours? First of all, we have for Aero, we have three operations in China. Okay, two of them are actually associated companies, so there's no contribution as far as the top line is concerned. Okay, so we only console at the bottom line. Having said that, I would say that the contribution are not that high. I would say to the group, it's not material. There's a question from Lauren Tan, Morningstar. Following up on the labor shortage challenge, can the group mitigate the rising costs going forward, either by raising prices or finding other efficiency elsewhere? I would say that over the years, we are definitely cognizant that there's labor shortages, and we have various strategies that we put in place to mitigate the cost. One area is in terms of automation. Okay, we are actually accelerating the leverage of technology in our operation. To give you an example, I've talked about it. The gliding of the blades, using robotic arms. Removing the abradables from the engine fan case. Also using robotic arms, and be able to reduce the hours that is clocked onto the job by 30-40%. Likewise, we have also been piloting the use of unmanned air system to inspect aircraft. Okay, typically, let's say to inspect an aircraft, it takes about 9 hours manually. Okay, and we can actually halve it. So these are the steps that we are taking to mitigate the rising costs. The other one, obviously, back to the U.S. side, is that we are also cognizant of the Airbus is next to us. Actually, that's the reason why we actually start up operation in Pensacola. And we start our operation in Pensacola is because it has a good catchment of retired military personnel. Okay, and in fact, looking at the manpower state, I would say that we have been able to attract and retain people in Pensacola.
The other one, could we raise costs? Raise price? Obviously, I would love to. But the customer will always, you know. But getting some traction, I would say, because the customer in US recognize that. Okay, because if they want good quality, reliable MR service provider, they have to help sustain the ecosystem. So you will see that it'll be reflected in some of the rates going up.
Yeah, I mean, at the end, the market will have its own dynamics. It's a competitive market. You know, we also need to be cognizant of that. So we'll see how the dynamics evolve over time. Obviously, a very competitive market, both in terms of at the customer level and at the talent level. Okay, at this time.
Hi, this is Rachel from UBS. I have a question on the impairment of receivables. There was quite a big jump, and in the comments, it was attributed to aerospace and land systems. Which was the primary division where this was recorded, and was this mainly due to one customer or multiple customers?
It's mainly aerospace. Heavier on aerospace than land systems, but you know it's part of end of program review, so the net impact to the group is not a negative one, all things considered at the end of program, but the receivables impairment is largely aerospace, although we have some in land systems.
Okay, the next question will be on electronics. Hi, Ravi. Are you able to elaborate on the higher costs incurred by SPTEL? And could I check if you would incur these costs under your SSG segment?
Ravi, you got a question. Can you elaborate more on the higher costs incurred by SPTEL? And Rachel, what's the follow-on? There's another question.
Is it recorded under
SSG. And whether that is recorded under SSG. Ravi, you got a question?
Yeah, I've got the question. So, first of all, on SPTEL, I think as you are aware, we continue to invest to build up the infrastructure. So, we have invested, starting last year, begin to build up the network, and we will continue to do so over the next few years. SPTEL is recorded as part of CSG.
CSG.
Okay, thank you. And I have a final question for Cedric on the employee benefits. So I understand that the big increase was due to the acquisition of the pension liabilities from MRAS. Going forward, do you expect the numbers to stabilize, or should we expect to see the pension employee benefits steadily increase?
So the pension for MRAS is a defined benefit plan, and therefore the liability is a function of mortality studies and a discount rate, whereas the assets is a function of the returns from the way we manage the pension assets. So I would say that the latter has been doing well because we have invested and equity markets, especially in the US, have performed well. So we have quite good returns to reduce the gap between liabilities and assets. On the former, I think it depends on mortality tables and actuarial studies and also future interest rates. So you can take a crack at it.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Ajit from UOBKN. To Cedric, could you perhaps share with us the book value of the 39 engines as at end December 2019? So that's my first question. Second question is on Tu Sing Chan. Perhaps you could share with us what's the DRC level for the marine sector in Singapore. So that's the second question. Third question is to Sergi and perhaps to Vincent as well. Are you concerned by the Trump administration's planned 10% tariff on Airbus, and how would that impact MRAS? So these are my three questions.
So Cedric?
Yeah, I would just say that the securitization program is profitable, and it's, I think the profits are meaningful. But I wouldn't go into book value because I think the purpose is the same. Thank you.
And you will see the results, you know, in first quarter of the 2020. Yeah. Because it's, you know, we securitized the you know, portfolio of 30 engines and with positive P&L, but we were not at liberty to go into that level. But obviously, it's positive. As Cedric mentioned, we won't go into details of book value, but you know, we want to do more basically to increase scale going forward. Okay. Sing Chan, you'll take a second.
On the DRC level, as at end of 2019, we are at a level that is below even the forward numbers as stipulated by the ministry.
So you will not be affected next year?
No.
Okay. And the tariffs for Airbus, perhaps, on Airbus implemented by the Trump administration, I'll let Sergi share his insights.
You mentioned 10%. I think they increased it to 15. Yeah. But okay, the tariff is actually on aircraft. Okay, so ultimately it's the customer that pay for it. Okay, so it's actually the airlines in US who have paid for this. So you will not have any direct impact on us, because we are actually supplying the nacelle system to Airbus. So as far as we are concerned, there's no impact. And I also see that in a way Airbus is also a defensive strategy on their part. That's why they're actually expanding their operation in Mobile. Okay, in fact, they are going to not just the A320, they are actually moving the 220 lines also to a Mobile, and there are also some talks about 330, but I don't see any impact at this point in time on us, if you are referring to the nacelle system that we are supplying to Airbus. My own assessment, what choice do they have? Max? So I don't see, you know. In fact, right now the backlog is so many years that in fact, if the airlines would be more than happy to take any new that's coming out. But Southwest is a 737 loyalist.
737 loyalist.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, if I were Delta, I'll make a lot of noise because I have to pay for it.
So, but I mean, like the situation,
you see, they have to replace aircraft, right? And they have put an order. The way it's the contract is constructed is, as always, the customer have to pay. But I don't see any. We don't see cutting back on the orders for our nacelle system, actually.
Yeah.
Well, not exactly single source, but well, for the A320s, I guess, A320 news, would your pricing be affected for the nacelles?
Well, we have a contract that, you know, and we will just follow the contract. You know,
I don't see there's any impact at all.
Okay, thank you.
There are two questions submitted from our members who sign on via webcast. First is directed to Xianglong Land Systems. Gerald Wong from Credit Suisse. Xianglong, the question for you is, what drove the higher S&T profit? So that's the first question. The second question goes to Electronics Ravi from also Gerald from Credit Suisse. How do you see prospects for your cybersecurity business, especially with the $1 billion allocation by the Singapore government over the next 3 years? So maybe we'll start with Xianglong first. What drove the higher S&T profit?
Okay, for the S&T profit, the growth is in tandem with the growth in the revenue. And also because of the higher project deliveries in the area of ST synthesis, which is basically facility management, we have been doing well. So that is one area for S&T. The other area of S&T growth is in terms of the higher MRO component sales.
Thank you, Xianglong. We'll move on to Ravi.
Thanks for the question, Gerald. On cybersecurity, we continue to build up our capabilities and also our business, especially in the OT or critical infrastructure area. Just to share, to date, we have secured contracts to build more than 15 cybersecurity op centers. So we are in a good position to grow our business, and certainly as expenditure on cybersecurity increases, especially in government, we hope to get a share of it, and we expect the business to grow. And we continue to build deep capabilities which are necessary for this business. So I think the prospects are good, and we just need to continue to build capabilities and deliver.
I'm Claudia from the Business Times. So I have two questions. The first one is, given the success from the securitization of the 30 aircraft engines, are there further plans to securitize other assets? And my second question is, other than the negative impact from the virus outbreak, does the company see any opportunities that have arisen? For example, being able to acquire for cheaper?
I think we will take the second one, and then I'll let Cedric maybe talk a little bit more, and Sergey if necessary. So, yes, while we see near-term challenges on COVID-19 outbreak, we also see that this is a good time to be keeping our sensors up for value opportunities, you know, distressed assets or acquisition opportunities if they become available. But we'll certainly keep a lookout, as we have always been, so that nothing changes. As I mentioned, where there are opportunities that create long-term value for our stakeholders, we'll certainly want to capitalize on them, including acquisitions. Yeah. For securitization, in our investor day, we also talk about doing that for aircraft leasing through kind of a similar model. Once we have a little bit more scale for aircraft leasing business, we will also consider that, given that our engine leasing business is off to a good start.
Okay. Patrick here, just coming back to a question that relates on Budget 2020. So the government here has actually put out a target, right? 2040, no more diesel and petrol vehicles. So my question is that there's 5,000 diesel buses just in public transport, and you've got a solution to convert diesel to electric buses. That's the first one. Second one, it is 26,000 chargers, right, for cars, right, say in 10 years. You know, how much of this is actually opportunity that ST Engineering can actually tap, right, in the next 1-2 years?
Okay, it's a good question. Now, the first one on electric bus conversion, I'll let Dr. Lee Hsiang Long brief us on that. Obviously, it presents opportunities for us. The second one is on EV chargers, and I can let Ravi talk about it because we are already doing some of those projects. So, Hsiang Long?
Yeah, thanks for the question. I think the plan to really take a firm step going towards the electrification of the buses are quite clear. So we are fortunate that we had a head start. We got a proof of concept project about a year and a half ago from LTA. And recently, you probably will know that we have just launched the electrification of the diesel buses successfully. So that presents us with a very good opportunity. We see that LTA is planning a longer-term plan in terms of bringing in new electric buses, which we are also delivering 20 this year. And as well as the conversion of the diesel buses to electric, and we are in a good position to do so. The rationale for LTA to do so is that electric buses are a lot easier to maintain.
Yeah. So while we await Dr. Lee's coming back online, Ravi, we are certainly capitalizing on such opportunities in the base case, and of course we've just moved to
more information.
We will do more. So Hsiang Long, you cut out a bit a minute ago. So.
Oh, I see. Where did I cut off, Vincent?
You know, we talk about the conversion proof of concept and the projects that you'll be given. Yes.
All right. Okay. So we are seeing that LTA has a plan to progressively bring in the electric buses, the new electric buses, and as well as the retrofitting of the diesel buses to electric. So we are delivering 20 electric buses this year to LTA, that's new buses, and as well as retrofitting the diesel buses. So we are in a good position to reap the benefit of our effort.
Okay. Thank you, Samuel. So can I ask Ravi to comment on the charger, electric charging, EV chargers?
Okay, this is Ravi. So on the EV charging, just share, I think, two of the things we are doing. In Singapore, we have worked with some partners to develop EV charging systems for the local pilots. I think more interestingly, in China, we have actually gone ahead to develop an EV charging platform to allow users to actually book and use and EV charging stations, and we are doing this first for a taxi fleet manager, and this is one of the first projects we have done, and we expect that as EV charging and EVs become more common in Singapore, there'll be need for both EV chargers, but I think more importantly the EV platforms to be able to book and use the EV charging services. So we see a lot of potential in this area.
Okay. Thank you, Ravi. We have a question from Karen, AGI investor. It's a group level question. The question is, thank you for asking the question. For 2020, if we expect growth momentum to continue, is it possible to elaborate the outlook for each of the four major businesses and which will be more supportive in the next 2-3 years? Do we expect the growth to be comparable to 2019. So we have kind of changed our approach in terms of giving a prospect statements, you know, since 2 years ago, and focus more on medium term, 5-year kind of outlook and target versus year on year target. So I think to address this question, our momentum towards our 5-year plan continues. So if you can refer to our Investor Day targets, those are our 5-year plan targets for 2022, and we remain on track to achieve those. despite any near-term impact in 2020 because of COVID-19 outbreak, which we assess to be not mature at the group level at this time. But of course, if the situation evolves, we'll have to reassess beyond, if the situation evolves beyond the current level of severity, we'll have to reassess our position and our estimates. For now, we say that if the situation continues as it is through middle of the year, then we don't think that the impact will be material, and our growth momentum will continue towards our five-year plan targets. We have one more question. What happened to Ravi and Dr. Lee? This is a question from James Chiu. Are they both on quarantine? No. At the beginning of this session, we mentioned that we are on our business continuity plan. We try not to have all our senior management members in the same room at the same time as part of our split team operation, as many companies do. So this is just that. So they are dialing in from a nearby location to participate in the call, but they are certainly very well at this time. Okay. Any other questions? If not, I thank you all for participating in today's results briefing. For those of you who are physically here with us, please stay back with us, and we hope that you'll join us for lunch. Thank you.